since, I mean, Vajrayana is called the fruitional jnana. And when you look at the Buddha nature teachings, I mean, from the get-go, it speaks about the fruition, actually, right? Especially when you come at it from a disclosure model point of view, the qualities are already there, which means that is the fruition. You just have to reveal that. And that's, at least in the Kagyu tradition, that's also the view. So you could, you know, kind of loosely say the idea in the Vajrayana from that point of view is, you know, fake it till you make it. Like you're working with a fruition and you try to connect to it in some way as early as possible and as directly as possible. That's the whole idea of the Vajrayana. And at least from the Kagyu point of view, that's really only possible if there is already something to connect to begin with, not something that you have to create along the way, because then, strictly speaking, you can't really call it the fruitional vehicle, in my view at least. So in order to work with the fruition, then you need to look through what is called the obscurations, and then also realize that they actually never existed from the beginning, really. Which is the whole, you could say that's the idea of the whole, like, Utpatikrama, Sampannakrama progression, because it becomes more and more rarefied as you go, both in terms of what you supposedly purify and also in terms of the methods that you apply, which tallies very nicely with the idea of you're not really working on the Buddha nature, because there's nothing to work on, it's already perfect. But what you're working on is what obscures it, which means the remedies actually and the obscurations, that's where the work happens, not on the level of actually the Buddha nature itself. And so that means both the obscurations and the remedy are part of the dualistic mind, and actually both from the point of view of Buddha nature are the obscurations. The remedies are also obscurations from point of view of Buddha nature. So the remedies need to be more and more refined as the obscurations become more and more subtle. But then in the end, you always have to give up the remedy as well, because otherwise you're still stuck in a dualistic mindset, which prevents you from realizing Buddha nature. And that's often said in the Mahamudra, Vajrayana, Dzogchen tradition, right? All these statements, there's really nothing to do, and we don't use remedies. You just have to recognize what is there, like whether you call it Rigpa, Buddha nature, ordinary mind, Tamil Gishepa, whatever it is, it's always very clear. It's already there. You just need to recognize it. So that tallies very much with the whole, as it is presented in the Uttara Tantra and the Buddha nature teachings. So it's the key point is recognition versus non-recognition, rather than actually removing something that obscures something else or creating something that wasn't there. So the classical example obviously is the rope and the snake thing, or you could say garden hose with zigzag pattern and the snake. So at any given time the snake never existed other than in the mind of the perceiver. So you can't really take away some snake that's lying on that rope and obscures it and put it somewhere else and then you see the rope. It's rather to recognize, to take a good look and recognize that there never was a snake in the first place. And that's exactly what Maitreya says, right? You see something that doesn't exist, the snake or the obscurations, and through that you don't see what actually does exist, the rope or Buddha nature. So I think that's the key point in Vajrayana, Mahamudra and Dzogchen. It's about recognition. And that's also what a lot of the instructions say. So it's not about removing anything, actually. It's more about seeing through. And that's why the obscurations are called adventitious, right? It's part of that. It does not only mean they are not intrinsic to Buddha nature, but it also means they're actually just fluff. There is no substance to them. And I think that's also a key point for Vajrayana, if you have that view. Because, like it also says, you know, no matter what happens, no matter how many afflictions you have, it doesn't change the wisdom nature of the mind, or it doesn't change Rigpa, for example. And that can really be understood, I think, very nicely through the, if you have some familiarity with the Buddha nature theory, because that's what it says there too, and explains in great detail. So I think, and it also, I think, has a lot to do with devotion in the Vajrayana too, the whole idea of Buddha nature, because it also says in the Vajrayana that it's not enough just to have devotion to the guru, like as an outside entity, but it's equally important to have devotion to the inner guru, which is nothing other than Buddha nature. So it needs to be both, because otherwise it becomes some kind of, you know, oh, the guru has it all and I have nothing. And then it becomes a little bit theistic approach, you know, like this higher being, and I need to get something which I don't have. Rather than, yes, the nature of our mind is identical, only difference is that person has realized, I do not, but it's not that I actually get something from that I don't have, but they help me to realize what I do already have. And that's also a very different outlook on the whole path. So it's kind of, I think it's a nice antidote for poverty mentality, actually. You know, like hungry ghost, I need to get something I don't have. And flipping that around and seeing, oh, you know, I do have all these things, or strictly speaking, I don't, but they are there, with or without me. And then, you know, the journey is more like one of discovery rather than, you know, trying to get something extrinsic or, you know, somewhere else. So I think, you know, like, it's almost like a little koan. You could say it's like, it's about the question, what is my mind without me? That's what you're looking for. Or not you.